truthfully, what happens is, as children grow up, we start to educate them progressively from the waist up. And then we focus on their heads, and slightly to one side.
I think in the old days, you know, you were better off. Because nowadays, they're all specialists. Everyone's becoming better and better, and less and less. And eventually, someone's going to be superb at nothing.
Our education system has mined our minds in the way that we've strip-mined the earth for a particular commodity. And for the future, it won't serve us. We have to rethink the fundamental principles on which we're educating our children.
We're not here to tell everybody that they're wrong and we're right. We're not saying that we have all the answers, but we'd like to present a different way of looking at it.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to China Jedication. Episode 21. My name is Adam Domenico, and I'm a teacher at QSI in Zhuhai.
You are indeed. Welcome, Adam.
Thank you. Thank you for having me here.
Well, it's taken a long time to get here. You're a busy man.
I am.
All those kids that you've got. But of course, all the marvellous things that you're doing outside of just what you normally teach, which is why, really, we wanted to get you on today.
Sounds great. I'm here. Happy to be here.
So, first question everyone likes to know is, what the hell brought you to China?
So, it started about, I think 8 years ago, we initially had decided to go in education overseas, and we were looking for schools, basically that would just take us because we were right out of school ourselves, and we found a little school in Macau, and we had heard about QSI, which is where we're at right now. And we had backtracked a little bit. They had said you need 2 years to work in China.
Yes.
And so we were interested in China because it seems like, you know, it's an interesting place to be. And so, but the only place that would take us was the school in Macau, being brand new teachers. So we just said, okay, we never heard of Macau. It's jet set there and packed up our stuff and ended up teaching in Macau for 2 years. And then we came back to the QSI because we had our 2 years. And they said, well, China's full, but we'll take you in Almaty, Kazakhstan. So,
okay, Almaty, Kazakhstan.
Kazakhstan, yes.
Which is real. Central Asia, right?
Yeah, yeah. And we looked that place up and saw these beautiful mountains. And we said, oh, that looks kind of like an adventure. Now that we've been overseas, we can handle that. Did sound as scary as maybe it initially had a couple years before that. So we went to Almaty for 2 years. And then the QSI offered us the job in Zhuhai, which was really surprising and shocking to us because it was right literally across the street from Macau. So we'd known the area, and so we jumped on that transfer and ended up in China here. We've been here for 3 years.
So, if I hear you rightly, you came from the States and you're from
California. Yeah, Northern California.
Northern California. You just wanted to go and teach outside of California.
Yeah. Well, the job market was there was no jobs basically available for teachers. So it was during the financial crisis, and we just said, you know, we immediately know going into education we're going to just go overseas because it's just not a job market here. So and the lifestyle fit our lifestyle, you know, just adventure and traveling and all that stuff.
Indeed. And Macau, you were there for 2 years, but you obviously wanted to leave. Was that because you because Macau's a small place.
Very small.
They're very different to here in Zhuhai, although we're so close in geographical terms.
Yeah.
But give us a nutshell of Macau. Yeah,
Macau is not China. It's, you know, it's its own place. It's super densely populated. The people there, it's a transient population. People come and go. So, you know, it's a little hard to break into making friends there. And there's no green spaces. It's not the best place to raise a child. You know, there's barely any place to walk on a sidewalk there. So coming over to Zhuhai, it's a breath of fresh air, you know, with all these parks and walkways along the rivers and the beautiful apartments that are here compared to Macau. So it's a whole different world across the water.
I often say the Zhuhai Tourism Board, if there is one out there, I don't know if there is one in English, but, you know, really should be sponsoring us because we have so many guests on here giving such nice views of this lovely city.
Yeah, everybody talks about, you know, it's in the QSI system as the Zhuhai is the jewel of the China and of the QS, one of the QSI schools. It's so underrated. Yeah, well, everybody that's been through here always, you know, keeps promoting it, and people are a little afraid to go to China sometimes, and they get here and they're just shocked at how nice it is here. You know? And I still think it's a really beautiful city.
So, Adam, when you were in Macau, did you get a chance then to come over and see the mainland, Zhuhai? Because, of course, it's just a border crossing.
Yeah, it was a lot more difficult back then because you only could go through one entry point and you had to have the visa was only good for 6 months. So I did come over a couple of times with some friends and walked around. And it seemed so foreign when I came over here. I was shocked. It was like I was going on this huge adventure.
Yeah.
But I was just amazed at how you know, you had these big 6-lane roads and trees and everything like that. And you just don't see that all in Macau. You know, I mean, it's one of the most densely populated places in the world. So
yeah,
just right across the river. So.
I mean, when you came over, did you think that you would be living here?
No. That was why it's funny. When I checked my email in the middle of the night, I got the transfer request. They always just come through email, and you have 24 hours to accept. And okay. So I literally just turned it off, opened it up, and it said Zhuhai. And I was like, how? What in the world are the chances? I mean, we have like something like 38 schools now across, you know, I don't know how many continents now. And they put us right back, literally like across the river from where we used to be. So we immediately were like, we immediately jumped on it because we knew about it. You know, it could have been that, or it could have been Turkmenistan or Armenia or somewhere else that was a lot less desirable. So there's a lot of places that we didn't want to go. So getting out of Almaty too for us was one of our goals too, because for us it was the weather alone, it was way too cold. We're not cold weather people coming from California. So.
Right, and I mean Almaty,
yeah,
is the capital of...
It was the capital of Kazakhstan, now it's Astana.
Okay,
but it had all the consulates and all that stuff there. So there's a lot of business, and it's a financial hub for Central Asia.
Right. So. I mean, I'm sure I don't know too much about it until I met you, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners don't. But I've seen some of the pics because you're quite an avid photographer, aren't you?
More of like an amateur kind of, yeah.
An avid amateur photographer.
Avid amateur.
No, but you like to blow them up, don't you?
Yeah, take pictures of all kinds of stuff, and especially with drone photography and those kind of things.
And you do have a drone.
I do.
Of course,
lots of gadgets.
You are Teacher Gadget. Yeah. Actually, I think we should call this podcast research Teacher Gadget. Yeah, I'm getting a smile. That's probably a no.
We'll think about that one. So, no,
but going back, of course, with the drone, just on the side, you helped us to do our music video, which was...
My feet are in it, too.
The feet. Well, your head's in it as well.
I'll zoom in somewhere, yeah, okay.
Procrastination, Ting Ma Dong, check it out here. Sun Yat-sen, YouTube, just Google it. So it's got about 8,500 hits, I think.
I know, I checked it out, yeah. I showed some friends there. They're still singing it the next day.
I sing it every day in China. I don't understand.
It's pretty catchy.
So Almaty, in comparison to Macau, if you had to do 2 years again of hard labour, would you go to Almaty or would you go to Macau?
That's a good question. I would probably go to Macau. Macau has a lot going for it. It's, you know, I mean, there's a lot more to do there. It's like the weather. You're easily connected to Asia. But in Almaty, you're in the middle of nowhere. You're literally in like the, you know, the steppe of Central Asia. And it takes, you know, 6-7 hours to fly anywhere.
Wow.
Plus... And it's pretty remote. As soon as you get outside of the city, you're by yourself. There's only 14 million people in a country, the ninth largest country in the world.
Ninth largest?
Yeah, by landmass, yeah. So, I mean, it's pretty the opposite of Macau.
Wow.
You know, so there's more horses than people there.
Oh, whoa.
Yeah, yeah.
Your pictures, that, I mean, it's very, how do I say, it's Soviet-esque.
Yeah,
it's got that kind of...
I think that's what maybe didn't attract us to it. It was very like a
bland.
Yeah, everything's kind of brown.
Yeah,
and it's kind of like you describe a city in a color, it'd be gray. You know.
Yes.
You know, and I mean, yeah, in the springtime, it's, you know, it's green grass and flowers and all that, but that's very short compared to the long winter of, you know, -25 degrees and people are a little hard and cold because they've had to kind of put up with that Soviet kind of background and past. So.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but I mean, you know, once you get to know people, they are very warm and friendly, and I have fond memories of Almaty. I mean, my son was born there.
He was born.
Well, not born there. No. He was born in the States, but
yeah,
he went there shortly after, and he spent his first year of his life there. So,
but it's a big school, isn't it? KSI in Almaty.
Yeah, it's our third largest school. We have about 600 something students there, and it's a great school, fantastic facility. It's beautiful, like, you know, it's got a great campus, it's got an ice skating rink on the campus, and and huge apartments for teachers and just big green spaces. And so it's a great school. I mean, if anybody wants to, it's a great, if you want to go and teach and in a really, you know, high quality environment, and that's a great place to go in the system. So.
Yeah, indeed. Okay.
There's a lot of good schools.
I mean, we could talk for ages about that country, anyways, but we can't because, you know, I'm always getting prodded. So let's prod on. From California, then, where were you educated?
I went to the University of Sacramento in Northern California. I graduated from there. Actually, I went back to school a lot later than, you know, I dabbled in some different work fields and right out of high school, and, you know, went to a little bit of college and then took some time off and then ended up going back. My wife and I, much later, we were 26.
To do your teaching?
To do our actual, just finishing our 4-year bachelor's
degree. Oh, I see, right, okay.
Yeah, so graduated from University State Sacramento, and then we went right into our teaching program, which was a 1-year program, just down the road from there, too. And then graduated from there, and then as soon as I graduated, actually, I was still waiting on my credential in June, and we got our job offer right then. And then we accepted the job in Almaty, which we started in August. So it was everything kind of fell right.
Hang on, you went Almaty or Macau? You went to Macau first.
I'm sorry, Macau.
Okay.
So really, I didn't even get my actual credential till after I got to Macau because I was still waiting on the paper.
Well, I'm sure lots of teachers, even I, know those stories. Who needs a credential?
Overseas.
Well, so on that front, you got your university degree in gadgetry.
My degree is in social science and economics, and then I have a single subject teaching credential for social science, which means I can teach basically a sixth grade and up, through high school. So
and that is what you're doing at the moment in GUI. You're teaching social studies.
Yeah, so that's my main teaching core subject area is social studies.
Now, I want to go back a bit before university. Mm-hmm. Let's go back to when you were a boy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what was your education like then? You know, were you in lots of schools? Was it one school all the way through? Just give us a snapshot.
I had a pretty normal background when I was going through school. I mean,
California.
California, a small town, 15,000 kids. And
What's it called? What was the name of it?
Grass Valley. And we went, just normal all through our elementary school and high school and education. The schools there were pretty high quality. It was a fairly middle class kind of town with retirement folks there. So it was nice and safe.
Not
walk
much guns.
Around. Everybody knew each other. So just kind of a pretty normal schooling background.
Mm-hmm.
I would say maybe upper class of the schools there. You know, it was a high quality compared to maybe if you were in the inner city.
I see.
Like that.
Okay.
So, yeah.
And Green Valley, did it have valleys that were green?
Grass Valley. Yeah, it's kind of in the foothills. I don't know. It's just an area that's it's right below Lake Tahoe, so you just drive up the hill and get in. Yeah, so it's really beautiful outdoors and nature. So we had lakes and. We grew up kind of more in the countryside, so that's kind of our, the nature, the hiking and all that stuff.
I've been to Sequoia National Park in the south of California.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Okay.
I'd love to go up. I didn't have time to go up to the redwood forests and stuff, which I'm guessing is kind of, that's where you...
Yeah, we're kind of in the middle of that. So you just kind of, we're right, a couple hours down the Sequoia Forest, a couple hours to the redwoods, and that whole mountain range just kind of runs right up our alley right there. So lots of mountain biking, lots of kayaking. There's lots of, mountains to, do fun stuff and camping and stuff. So it's a great place if you can afford to live there. It's
never been invited yet, listeners.
Well.
Anyway, you're
invited to the next place.
You've just got too many kids.
Yeah.
What is the cutoff point, by the way, with friends? I mean, when is it? I don't know. Not Bradshaw. He's got four
We might book you a hotel room.
If you take the bill, I'm yours, buddy. Double bed en suite with the football channel. So, a favourite teacher. Everyone generally has one. Or a few. I don't know. The first one that comes to mind.
I'd probably be my sixth grade teacher just pops into my brain.
Okay.
He was Mr. Humphrey. He was a great guy. He he made things really fun. He was very musical, which is interesting because I'm not, so kind of
Mr. Humphrey, yeah.
Yeah, he just kind of brought out this kind of artistic side to everything, and he liked to incorporate songs into learning. So I still remember he taught us how to spell mayonnaise, M-A-Y-O-N-N-A-I-S-E. So and he would play it on the piano at the same time, which was just amazing because I don't know too many people that are like, you know, can play pianos and guitars and drums.
Yeah, yeah.
He just did all that, but he only his actually core subject was teaching English. So
wow,
yeah. So he didn't even teach music, but he was very like, you know, talented guy.
So what did he teach? He
taught English to me, sixth grade. Yeah, so
that's very interesting. You remember, you know, I would say crazy Mr. Humphrey getting on the piano and just starting to do word kind of. That's so powerful, I think, you know. The musical language is musical.
I think just doing something out of the norm is memorable for students, you know? Not just sitting down and doing a worksheet or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, doing something fun that's what makes you think of stuff. You know, in 20 years you're gonna remember something you read on the worksheet, or you're gonna remember the song somebody sang to you.
Well, and anyone can download a worksheet.
Yeah.
You know, those moments when the kid is with the teachers with the kids, I mean, they're special moments. They don't last forever at all. That worksheet's always there.
Yeah.
Okay, Mr. Humphrey, still around? Or,
you know? Unfortunately, I think he passed away a couple years ago, yeah. I saw him again, actually, after I graduated high school and down the road, and everything was good.
Like you bumped into him?
Actually, knocked on my door, actually, and I forget what he was looking for, like something, and then a lost dog or something like that in some other neighborhood. And I think he said, "Oh yeah." I said, "Do you remember me?" He said, "Oh yeah, I think I remember you." And I don't know if he's just being polite or whatever, but you know, I'm sure. I mean, I don't remember all my students. It's just, I mean, some teachers do, but.
Anyways,
when he knocked on memories.
When he knocked on your door, it's a shame he wasn't looking for mayonnaise. M-A-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N-O-N- Alan, you're teaching social studies now, but you said you also did economics. So have you ever taught economics as well?
Yeah, I've taught economics, yeah.
So what's the favorite subject you like to teach?
Actually, government's one of my favorite ones, yeah, because government actually aligns with the social science background. Government and psychology are two of my two favorite subjects. I taught AP psychology for a couple years, and it's just really interesting because it incorporates kind of all these different subjects, science and even a little math and social studies background. It's just kind of, it's a fun class. Most of the students really like that class. By the end of it, they're all kind of asking me, I think I'm going to go and try this again when I go to university. So,
okay.
Yeah, so it's kind of a cool class, why we're here today is my background's kind of leading into, even though my core subject is teaching social studies, is I'm really interested in incorporating all these ideas into teaching in a different way through the makerspace movement. So that's why we're here.
Now, hang on, listeners. This isn't a political party, okay?
It's an education movement.
It's an educational movement.
Changing people's ideas.
But there's nothing political about it, is it, Mr. D?
No.
And we're very much going to focus on this a bit more later, I think. Okay. So let's just leave it as a little nugget in the moment.
Okay.
Makerspace.
All right.
But what I want to say is, I haven't told you this, but I'm gonna be taking some more exams, some more praxis in elementary.
Oh.
And the problem is with elementary, because it's US praxis,
yeah,
there's a big component of social studies. And being a non-American, I have to learn about
all your amendments and
things like this. So it's just clicked.
So it won't be all about British,
It won't be about that at all.
Did this and
well, yeah, right. And it'll be, but from American's perspective, yeah. So it looks like you're the man I need to maybe come to.
Oh, okay. I might be able to help you out.
To get a little filling on all that.
Because yeah.
There's many stories I clearly don't know. I took a look at some of the past papers. teaching style.
Yes.
I hate categorizing things and stuff, but
yeah.
This is not an interview, but if it was, what's your teaching style, do you think?
I don't like to say project-based learning because that follows such a script. But I do a lot of integration of projects into my teaching, and having the students actually show what they know through projects, basically. And there's a formula for it, but I guess if you want to say like what's my teaching style, I guess it'd be the project kind of based style learning.
I see, allowing allowing essentially students to go on their own journey in a way within your framework.
Within my framework and guided along the way and making corrections to get back on the path sometimes. But yeah, kind of that project-based learning.
So. Love it, mate, love it. And of course, we're going to be talking about a lot of projects that you've been doing later. Now, you've taught different age groups, but at the moment you're doing six, right? Which is, am I right, grade six?
No, at the moment I'm doing middle school and high school, so I'm doing would be equivalent of grade 7 through grade 12.
Okay. Get them so mixed up when I try to.
It's okay.
We
even call it something different here. We call it 12s through secondary.
So basically they're teenagers, they're coming into the teenagers.
Yeah, they see 12-year-olds through 18-year-olds.
Now, I know there's one story that comes into my mind about certain situations that can go wrong when the children behave badly. Okay. Certain things can be thrown at you, for example, that could hurt you if it hadn't got you in there.
Connection.
Yeah, that was a hammer, wasn't it? You had a child throw a hammer at you, and you did a swivel and it went through the window.
Good reflexes. No, he was just a bad aim.
And what I want to ask you about, what it revolves around is your philosophy around discipline and a good strategy you found to teach. Let's focus on these kind of middle year kids now. That one who threw a hammer at you, I think, is...
That's extreme.
What happened with that child?
He had some social emotional issues, and he ended up having to leave our school because he needed some more support, and so he went on some plan outside of school. And I actually don't know what his path was after that, but
because that's quite small, isn't it? Doesn't have necessarily the support available to give someone.
Yeah, and I think even in most schools they wouldn't have support for that type of child, especially internationally. There's not a huge support base on students with special needs in the international realm. It's developing, but it still has a long way to go. So
he's got a good throw on him.
Yeah, he had a good arm.
Good arm.
Try out for baseball or something.
But on a serious front, then, because you do experience, I guess, within those age years, ups and downs emotionally and things like this.
Kids are notorious for being, going through. Through that age group are notorious for the emotional ups and down roller coaster kind of they're going through. But I don't know. For me, I think that the most important thing for just classroom management for that age group is just building relationships with the students. It's amazing how well they behave for you if you have a good relationship with them. And for them, even the learning part isn't the top of their priority list. It's the connections they're making with other students and their parents and their friends and all that. That's the highest thing on their priority list. So once you kind of get through that middle school year, then they start kind of coming back around to to other priorities. But yeah, just having a good relationship with them is so important. And we try to cultivate that in our school and outside of our classrooms by doing all kinds of activities with the kids. And there's another teacher I actually teach with. His name's Josh Hale, and he's done a really good job of introducing gaming to the board games to the kids and kind of. And really appealing to the kids as on a friendship basis, which just taught me a lot because just going that route has improved just my classroom management, and I don't really have discipline issues
because
the kids want to help you out. They want to do they don't want to let you down, and I mean you have all these other things that things that might pop up along the way when you can deal with those issues on a case by case basis, but. But for the majority of that age group, it's really relationship-based, which I think it might be for all.
Well, the fact that you don't have a lot of issues is because of the fact they can relate to you. There's that connection there that they don't need to go that one step out of, how do you say, the normal way you relate with each other.
Yeah.
There's a way of...
Yeah, I mean, they know me more on a personal basis, so they don't, I feel like if I can tell them seriously, hey, this is affecting me in this way, then I think they can relate to that more. They instead of just me being a teacher, they it's an actual human being, they feel more comfortable talking to me, and at least that's what I perceive. I mean, there's still always that teacher kind of student, relationship you have. But at least, we do after school activities and, we do events and stuff like that. And, they're more likely to do a good job for you. They don't want to let you down.
Wonderful. There's a famous comment, a famous quote, and I can't remember who it is, so I apologise to the person. Maybe McDowell comes into my mind, but he said, rules without relationship equals rebellion. Mm. And I really like, I've always liked that statement, especially as a teacher, because really, if there is no relationship between that person and the other person, then when you lay down a rule of which you both follow,
yeah.
if there's no relationship, no understanding,
it's true. Yeah.
then you're going to have rebellion.
Well, I think it's really true. So I think teachers, it's so important to focus on that when you first get a new class in the beginning of the year, is just to cultivate those relationships and, you know, start off just doing something fun and, you know, and the kids have to respect you too. So you have to lay down the rules and you know, hold them to standards and all those things. But you know, you don't have to just dive right into the material and you know, and say, this is how it's going to be. And, you know, you just, they're not robots and you're not a robot either, so...
Well, there are plenty of robot teachers out there. I've met a few.
Yeah.
And yes, do they need a good oiling? Was that the wrong thing to say? Anyway, you mentioned Mr. Humphreys.
Yeah.
And what you mentioned was when he played the M-A-Y-O, the Mayonnaise song, it was different. It was unique.
Yes.
What's unique about your classroom?
I guess you'd have to ask my students. But I would say probably they're not used to incorporating, say, different subjects kind of into like the core subject they're studying. So, for example, you know, if we're learning about the 1960s culture, they're not used to having to program a computer to read off, you know, Martin Luther King's speech or something like that. So I think that would kind of shock them. Like, you know, some of my kids go, I will always remember your projects. Might not like them, but I think they're just not used to the, you know, the different having to think outside the box.
Yeah.
Those kind of things. So challenging them a little bit more.
And you see, this is why I missed the gadget. you're here today, because we're going to talk a lot more about the Makerspace movement, as you said, not a political party, mm-hmm. and the great things that you're doing to teach the subjects in different ways, because it really does add a little bit of stardust to it. Wonderful. Now, I like this question. Most embarrassing moment as a teacher? We've all had them, and I'm sure we might have some more. I certainly will. give me one. What comes to mind when I say that?
I don't know if it's so much as embarrassing. I mean, I guess it was embarrassing. I mean, I've had lots of embarrassing moments. I mean, spilling coffee on myself or my zipper being down while I'm talking in front of the class. Yeah. You know,
that's a normal one. Everyone, every man goes through that.
But, yeah, I remember there's an incident where in Almaty, actually, where we had a parent teacher conference, and the parent came in and she looked at the door and found, for some reason, she thought she came in and she told me her son's name, and you don't really interact with too many parents as a teacher in international circuits.
Yeah.
Parents are so busy, and so I sat down and I kind of had to give her some bad news about how her son was, you know, failing everything and, you know, getting in fights and just really one of the worst students I've had in a long time. And she's, you know, she was crying in the meantime. I had to bring in my assistant director, and she came in and kind of explained too also the situation, basically telling her, and we really had to tell her that her son wasn't going to be allowed to come back. Like, we had to kick him out of the school.
How long did this last for, this kind of meeting?
It was about an hour.
An hour?
An hour, yeah. And I felt really bad for her, because the mom started she went through all these emotional roller coasters of being crying and then being mad and telling her, you know, telling me that she was going to beat her son when she got home. And then she went out in the hallway, and I had another conferences coming out, and so I had to tell her, you know, I'll be back with her. But it ended up being she was out in the hallway for an hour and a half crying, everybody's wondering what's going on. And then another parent came in and told me her son's name, but it was the same name that I just had the conference with, and I was so confused. And I checked, they had the same names, but she had a different last name, and so we had actually told the wrong mom that her son was being kicked out of school. And so, yeah, so that was, it was a fun, it wasn't a fun conversation to have with the mom. I actually put all the responsibility on the director, so he had to go and smooth things over. But
wow.
It was really, it was other, it was actually a series of events that led to that before that. But yeah, he ended up, you know, they, he ended up, I think, having to go and like bring her dinner or something that's kind of smooth things over.
Wow.
And make sure, and she was actually very much, much relieved that her son wasn't getting kicked out. And the mom's son, mom, that son actually was getting kicked out. She was expecting it. She was like,
okay,
oh,
right.
Oh, yeah, okay.
You were ready for it.
Yeah, so she was more ready for it. So
it just be fun. Remember? That the kid that you made the mistake of,
yeah,
the report you should have given her, was it a nice one?
Yeah, he was a great student.
It would have been funny if the flip side, you'd have given it to the other mom who thought the kid was terrible.
Exactly. It was there were a couple grade levels apart, and they have the same name, which is amazing. First and last name.
That is quite funny, actually.
Yeah. Won't make that mistake again.
Well, but a funny thing you said was that being in an international school, in your experience, you don't get much connection with the parents.
No, not really. I would imagine. I haven't taught in the States, but I feel like I would have a better kind of communication and relationship with maybe the parents. But overseas, the parents are very hands off, and I don't know if they feel like. You know, sending their child to an international school, it's kind of like our job to then kind of raise them and do what we need to do. But they're very hands off, and I know a lot of them are very busy and they travel. But I'll send out communications, but I almost receive no feedback.
All right, I see.
You know, and I see parents maybe twice a year, so basically from two parent teacher conferences.
Which leading on to my next question, actually, I think. And I don't know if you'd raise this, but I think this is a major issue with the next question. And that is, you know, what's your opinion on the... It's a broad question, and I guess you might have to answer it from where you are as an international teacher, but you can go wherever you want with this.
Yeah.
What's your opinion on the current state of education?
Mm.
Because for me, the teacher starts at home.
Yeah.
For me.
And no, I agree.
The teacher at school is an ancillary. I mean, very important, but it's not the main teacher.
No.
And if you ask me... Both teachers, the teacher and the parents, the teachers at home, need to have a connection.
Yeah, yeah.
And if we're seeing, you know, in areas in England, for example, and I'm sure in America, there is not a connection. The parents are too busy or they're just not around.
Yeah.
Then you have a situation internationally, like you're saying, where it's your job. We're busy with our jobs. That's why we're here. So just get on with it.
Yeah.
And then you have the flip side if you're working in like a Chinese international school where we don't get any connection with our parents because the Chinese teachers look after that.
Mm-hmm.
Current state of education, go anywhere with this.
Oh man, that's a big topic.
Well, keep it to one sentence.
Okay.
I mean, what's working? What do you think's working, or what needs to be improved and changed? Let me just give you a few hooks. Just the main thing that you think as a teacher.
You know, I think parents just need to spend more time with their children and take on that role as educator, not just you know, I'm the fun person or things like that, but I mean, you can still be fun, but just be involved in kids' lives. I mean, it's amazing how many students I ask, you know, hey, how many did your parents check on your homework tonight, or were they there while you're doing your homework? And the resounding answer is no, they weren't. You know, they came home after I was done, or they came home late, or I didn't see them last night. You know, it's just being present. And I don't know, it seems much different at the earlier ages. So my wife teaches the younger grades and the parents are much more involved, but as the students grow older, their parents kind of distance themselves a little bit more, which I think is actually is critical to the students that are doing very well are the students that have the parents around a lot.
You think that?
So, you can clearly see the connection from a teacher standpoint. And a lot of my colleagues will agree. We can immediately point to the student that's really doing well as their parents are involved.
Right.
So,
okay.
Yeah. So I think that's really key.
The makerspace movement, I think, would flip into this very nicely about the state of education and where it needs to kind of veer to in terms of what our kids in the classroom should be doing in the 21st century.
Yeah.
We'll talk more about that later. But on the China front, because we're both in China now. Well, you are not going to be in China soon. You're off to, you've got a posting in...
Ljubljana, Slovenia.
Yes, Ljubljana, Slovenia, which is where the QSI headquarters are.
Yes.
So, good stuff there. Well, congratulations on that.
Thank you.
But what has been your biggest challenge in China, do you think?
Inside education or outside of education?
Anything, your biggest challenge?
Anything. You know, don't know. You know, China's not. It's a pretty easy place to live.
As a teacher, then.
I would say maybe just communication with parents. You know, there's not a lot of.
So going back to exactly what.
Yeah, but this is more on a language base too. I mean, that also might be the thing is that the parents don't speak. They're not as international, so a lot of them only speak Chinese. And so, you know, if I send a message in English, they have to translate it, or it gets confused, or I need a translator. So, I mean, that part, that's an issue. I mean, we work around it, but you know, honestly, I mean, I don't feel like there's a lot of challenges in China or something things we can't overcome.
Okay.
I mean, so you know, being in our eighth year overseas, I think things just get easier as you live overseas.
Thick-skinned
about navigate things.
Yeah, navigate.
Yeah, things kind of roll off your shoulders a little bit easier. So.
Good attitude.
Yeah.
Well, finish then, as we always do with our teacher interviews.
Okay.
With a teacher's tip. A recipe for success if you want to compete. So give us your top strawberry on top of the cake kind of thing.
Teacher tip.
Teacher tip.
Oh, okay. Number one.
Only loud one.
Number one.
Only loud one.
Oh, man. Get your classroom management down.
Boring old song.
No, I'm serious. Right, yeah, it's so important as a teacher. I mean, you know, go in day one, you know, with you're having your tools in your bag and you know you know how to run that class, because otherwise those kids will walk all over you. And I've seen it so many times with so many teachers where they don't know how to control their classes. And it's just simple, you know, there's like five things I do or something, or other teachers do, that just make your class run super smooth.
Go on then, quickly.
So, you know, just pause and wait. You know, this is the classic pause and wait. Everybody's talking and you have something to say, don't talk over them, just pause and wait. You know, time management. You know, you gotta follow time management, follow to the T, otherwise things get chaotic.
Yeah.
You know, be planned and prepared, because if you turn on your computer, it's not working, you have a backup plan. Otherwise, things go all to chaos.
Yeah, yeah.
And then have your discipline measures in place with what you're going to do and follow through with them. So, you know, you have 1, 2, 3 steps, and then everybody knows. And then just communicate with everybody, teachers, parents, each other.
And that thing what you said earlier, the whole relationship thing, spending in the initial period when you start, don't go straight into the curriculum, teaching for tests.
Get to know, you know, the first day, play some games, you know, build Legos, just do something that's fun out of the ordinary, play a breakout box game or something, do something cool with the kids that can be educational based, but it doesn't have to be so strictly standard where we're going to start the curriculum and the unit and day one start learning, you know, this stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, so take a week to get to know everybody, because that stuff will just all fall into place and you guys will be smooth sailing the rest of the year. So there you go. That's my spiel.
Wonderful having you, buddy. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Let's go and have some fun in Makerspace.
Let's do it.
This is China Jedi, people. If you enjoy listening to the China Jedi podcast and want to get involved, either by asking a question, expressing your opinion, good or bad, light or dark, or even appearing as a special guest, then get in touch by emailing our team at info@chinajedi.com. That's info@chinajedi.com.
May the smile be with you.